Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, Internet world. Welcome to the Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and once again want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to join me today on my radio broadcast. Today is Thursday, May 12th, 2022. It's great to be back live again in the studio with you after taking off about a week. My wife and I, Becky and I, flew southwest all the way to Norfolk, Virginia, and then we had a great time as Becky graduated from Regent University with a degree in communication and journalism. She's official. Took us 5 years online to get through this, but it was just a wonderful time. Friday night during the commissioning, it rained on us. But thankfully, the Lord provided good weather on Saturday, and we had Governor Youngkin as one of the featured speakers. The Lieutenant General from Virginia also was one of the speakers. Her name is Winsome, I think. Pat Robertson spoke. It was a really rewarding, wonderful time. I'm so proud of my wife for everything she's accomplished. She's got her degree. She's writing right now for the Political Insider as we speak, and she's doing what she has been trained and schooled to do. And so it's good to be back in the studio with you. Today, unfortunately, I have to talk again about the power-hungry death culture of the Islamic Republic of Iran, because, again, they are putting on display what they do best, and that is executing their own. And here lately, in my stories about Iran, I've been talking about the way they are using dual citizens as political pawns. They did that with Nazanin Ratcliffe until finally the debt was paid by the British government so that Nazanin could finally come home. And that was the feature story a month or so ago. Today, I want to talk to you about a man. He's a Swedish scientist. He was on death row, scheduled to be executed on May 21st. I actually wrote his story in my book, Shout Freedom, The Desperate Cry of Iranians, a couple of years ago. He's been in prison for a while. And this is coming from the Center for Human Rights in Iran. This is a press release and a story. Iran's execution threat against Swedish scientists aimed at thwarting war crimes trial. I'll explain what that means. What the government is again doing is executing a man who's innocent, who has been coerced into making confessions that are not true. He is a scientist, and they're using his execution to thwart a trial against one of their own. The trial is against a man named Hamid Nouri, who is accused of war crimes, who's on trial in Sweden. And the Iranian government is engaging in blatant extortion. That's according to the executive director of the Center for Human Rights in Iran, Hadi Gahami. This thuggish behavior is an intimidation tactic aimed at disrupting a fair trial against a man accused of heinous human rights violations. So they're using this man to thwart the trial of a man that is justly guilty of war crimes. And his name is Amreza Jajali. I'm going to say that again because sometimes Amreza Jajali. It's a hard name to pronounce, but I want to make sure I get the name right. He is an Iranian-born Swedish physician and researcher specializing in disaster medicine. He was arrested by the intelligence ministry agents in Tehran in 2016 after traveling there from his home in Stockholm. He was invited by the University of Tehran to speak. For months, he was held in complete isolation from everyone, including his lawyer, in solitary confinement, where he was forced to make incriminating statements against himself on camera. The Iranian government later aired edited versions of him making the incriminating statements on national state TV. In his prison letter, Jalali, Amreza Jalali is his name, stated that the Iranian intelligence ministry had pressured him to engage in espionage, and after he was refusing to do that, he was forced to make false confessions on camera without access to a lawyer. They did the very same thing to Nazanin to get her to confess that she was a spy there to overthrow the government, and of course she wasn't. But this is what these tactics are all about. He was then tried over espionage charges in a secretive trial in Tehran. Well, basically, that's violating every one of his rights of due process. And he was sentenced to death back in 2017. Iranian state media reported Jalali's imminent execution will be May 21st, on the same day that the trial against Nouri is wrapping up. The outcome of Nouri's trial is expected to be announced on July 14th. Now, this is a man who's guilty of war crimes being tried. But they're using this execution of Amreza Jalali to stop the trial proceedings against this Nouri. Now, of course, Jalali has been suffering in Evin prison, and his health has deteriorated over the years. There's been no medical intervention to help him. Amreza has been sick the last 6 years, his wife, Vida, told the Center for Human Rights in Iran. He has lost so much weight. He has pre-cancer gastritis, anemia, stones in his gallbladder, skin disorders, mild paralysis of his foot, mouth ulcers. He's even lost. This man is hurting. This all started at the jail after his hunger strikes. And this has been going on ever since he was imprisoned. Now, this man that the Iranian government is trying to intercept and keep from being put to death or in prison, this man, this Nouri, he's 60 years old. He was detained back in 2019 in Sweden. And the court proceedings for his trial began last August. He's accused of intentionally killing a large number of prisoners who sympathized with various left-wing groups and who were regarded as apostates by the Iranian government. So he has been responsible for their deaths. It's a historic trial, this Nouri trial. Dozens of witnesses have testified. It's some of the worst crimes committed in the Islamic Republic of Iran and now is being tried in a court of law. And this is why they want to intrude on this trial by announcing the execution of Jalali to stop the proceedings against Nouri. Now, of course, the current president, Ibrahim Raisi, is also accused of participating in the mass execution of prisoners like Nouri has done. so this culture of death is rescuing one of their own who has participated in the death of many, many prisoners. So again, what I'm trying to say about Ahmadreza Djalali, he is among 15 other dual nationals detained in Iran without due process. I have his face on my Facebook page. I have several videos about his case. Save Ahmadreza. Save Ahmadreza Djalali. He is set to be executed May 21st. But again, this whole scenario of his execution is trying to interrupt the just proceedings against Nuri, who should be in prison, who should be put to death for what this man has done. And they are using Ahmadreza as a political pawn, claiming they will execute him. He's been on death row for 5 years. It's horrific what goes on in Iran. I'm going to be talking about what the Bible says about injustice in a few minutes. I'm going to tie all of this together, but I first wanted to tell you about Ahmadreza. Now, I want to transition here and talk to you about a woman. I've written about her in my book, Shout Freedom, and Dear God, Please Bring Freedom to Iran. She is a powerful voice against injustice. Just recently, in the last few months, she was finally released from prison. Her name is Atna Daemi. She was jailed in Iran for advocating for women's rights. But now that she's free and still living in Iran, she refuses to be silent. This is a courageous woman. I want to tell you a little bit about her, and then I want you to hear briefly this interview that she did with the Center for Human Rights in Iran. She grew up in a religious conservative neighborhood in the south of Tehran. I'm speaking of Atna Daemi. And she noticed right away the way in which women were treated differently than men. Of course, girls had to cover almost every inch of their bodies and severely restrict their activities, while men could wear and do almost anything they wanted to do. And in this interview, Atna says, I realized that when I was not allowed to do something in the household, or when I insisted on my natural rights, I was in a way fighting for my rights as a woman. That's why I and many others entered this path to protest and oppose discrimination against women. I want to stop right here. As you will hear me describe and quote from Atna about women's rights in Iran, which really doesn't exist, it amazes me that the very people here in the United States, the feminists, are always complaining about their lack of human rights. And of course, now with the possibility of Roe versus Wade being overturned, they're in a frenzy. What about my rights as a woman? You have no right to kill an innocent human being. Human rights begins in the womb. But these are the very people here that are always clamoring about their injustices and lack of human rights. You never hear these American feminists ever talk about women like Atna Daemi, who have no rights in Iran. You never hear them ever raise their voices in support of Atna. Well, I'm going to do it for them. Now, I want to talk about her a little bit and then quote her from this interview. She spent 6.5 years in 3 prisons. She was psychologically tortured, beaten, denied medical treatment, and harassed. And since her release in January of this year, she has refused to retreat into the state's preferred role for her. What's that? To be subservient, to be domesticated, to be hidden. And instead, she is speaking out for the rights of prisoners and speaking against the inhumane practice of child marriage. I spent 7 years of my life in prison, Atna says. My family suffered a lot. They were threatened and assaulted. Nevertheless, I shouldn't be talking about my own problems. I should be the voice of other prisoners now that I'm out of prison. This is a woman who's not thinking of herself. She's thinking of others. What a wonderful human being. She says in her path to protest, engaging in human rights, the whole motive for it was the restriction on women and girls in Iran, from the workplace to the home. She mentions when she was 14 or 15, she didn't understand these issues and how they focused on women's rights because it was such a norm for her. It was normal everyday living. But then when she began to experience the restrictions on herself, she says, I got involved in civil rights activities. How would you describe the systematic restrictions on women in Iran? The interviewer asks. Atna says, when women are in social environments outside the home, such as in school or at work, they notice that these restrictions are not personal, but are rather directed at all women. For example, I would hear from friends at high school that they had to get married for various reasons, despite their young age. They had problems studying and dropped out of school. When I witnessed these things, I saw a common suffering, a social problem. It wasn't personal. It concerned all of us. On the other hand, there was the issue of intolerance inside the family. I was raised in a neighborhood that was almost in the south of Tehran. Our school had a very religious climate, and many things like wearing the chador and prayers were compulsory. You had no choice. Experiencing these things made me realize that the restrictions were not just being imposed on me alone, but on all girls. Later, in the workplace, I faced other forms of discrimination and restrictions against women that also pointed to widespread inequality. The gender-based bias in the workplace that gives rise to discrimination against women made me realize how far-reaching this problem is. Witnessing these various forms of discrimination and inequality gradually led to a series of questions. Why should women in Iran be subjected to so much injustice? Why should women be suppressed in so many ways? There are some men who oppose discrimination against women, so there are some men there, but they go on with their lives as usual because they think, well, the injustices, they're just normal. It's everyday life. And so there's been a long history of this in Iran, not just since the Islamic Republic of Iran, according to Atna, but it's gone on for so long. And the worst of treatment is when women are imprisoned. And what they do there is ghastly: rape, beating, tortured. Women, of course, are treated worse compared to men in prison. And so while she was in prison, she would become part of groups that would carefully look over how they were being treated. They would write letters, get the letters outside of prison to try to get these letters to the government. They would form groups, and they would hang out together. And they would stand up for their human rights. And they would be monitoring while in prison what was going on the outside, the November 19 protests. They would set up classes in prison, and they would have conferences together. And the security agents and the guards couldn't tolerate that. Of course, there was harsh restrictions against men, but nothing like the way women were treated. And so Atna was always a voice against injustice, even while she was in prison. She never stopped speaking out. She mentioned about the suffering of being in prison, and she talks about what she suffered, but also her family suffered, what her family had to go through, worrying about her medical condition, her state of mind, her state of being. And so Atna talks about in this interview about her different prison experiences. And I say all of that to say this. This is a woman who survived the prison experience against women. And when she was released, she was told to keep quiet, keep silent, but she refuses to keep quiet. She continues to talk about the unspeakable terror of child marriage, about how young 13-year-old girls are being married off in Iran. They haven't even physically or mentally developed yet, but it becomes almost a law there that it's something that they must participate in, that they must not disagree with, child marriage. And what it causes these women who grew up in child marriages, Atna speaks about how they have to fight to survive against their abusive husbands because they're married off so young. And in some cases, these women who are victims of child marriage defend themselves and kill their husbands, and the husbands, of course, get off scot-free, and the women go to prison the rest of their life for just defending themselves. From the ages of 10 to 16, they are married off to men they don't even know, and they're prevented from going back to school, from getting a job, to participating in society. This is what Atna does. She stands up to become their voices. And so I wanted to share this with you this morning about this very bold and powerful woman. But this brings up the issue, of course, of injustice. With Ahmed Reza Jalali, the injustice against this man who is set to be executed, the injustices that Atna Dami suffered, and also the injustice against women in Iran, what does the Bible say about this very important topic? I want to talk to us this morning. Biblical justice, social justice. Is there hope for the Ahmed Rezas and the Atnas and the women of Iran? Yes, there is. Here's what I want to say. Selling a human being, abusing a child, stealing from a widow, most if not all of us would agree that using force or fraud to exploit the vulnerable is evil. And I'm speaking of child marriage in that context as well. We carry within us an innate sense of right and wrong. Now, that applies to the Islamic Republic. They have a sense of right and wrong, but it's so corrupted by sin that what they believe they're doing is right, even though it's completely evil in God's eyes, they have corrupted their soul, even though they have an inward conviction of what is right and wrong. We have that as normal human beings, a sense of right and wrong, a conviction that oppressors should be punished and the weak protected. We want justice, absolutely. Justice, in its simplest form, means to set things right. Well, how do we know what is right? Who defines right? Is it society at large? Is it the Islamic Republic of Iran? Or is it the culture we live in? Who decides what's right? Is there a moral law that we inherently know to follow? Yes, there is. As Christ followers, the answer is simple. Our sense of justice is imparted to us by our Creator God. He is loving, kind, and merciful, but he's also righteous, holy, and just. Listen to what Scripture says, Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 4. The rock, his work is perfect, for all his ways are justice, a God of faithfulness and without iniquity. Just and upright is he. God is just. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Steadfast love and faithfulness go before you. Psalm 89, verse 14. God is just. It is who he is. He's always just. He cannot be unjust. And he defines and sets the standard for justice. Of course, we hear that God is a God of love And God is holy more than we hear than that God is just. We need to talk about that attribute of God. And we may readily agree that God sets the standard for love and holiness, but do we understand that he also sets the standard for justice? Pursuing biblical justice means we follow God's way to make right that which is wrong. And we don't look to our own laws and our own government to set the standard of what is right. We are to look to God's word, not to the Quran, not to the Hadith, not to any other book in the world. If we want to understand true justice from God's standard, we go to the Bible, and we see this in the person of Jesus. He is our standard of righteousness. Jesus lived a perfect, sinless life. He died a sacrificial death and rose again to make right that which was wrong. It is because of Jesus and his work on the cross that you and I can be justified and made right with God. And Jesus demonstrates a beautiful example for us to follow in the New Testament as one who cared for the outcast. And he reached out to them with compassion to help those who were often overlooked. Jesus pursued justice. He physically and spiritually rescued those in need, healing the leper in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 8, and caring for the woman caught in adultery in John chapter 8. They're just a few examples. As you look at the life of Jesus, it is clear that we as followers of Jesus are called to do the same, to do justice. We are called to take action, to confront evil, to care for the vulnerable, and make right that which is wrong. That's not a new mandate. It's not some cultural fad or something just a trend in today's society. This is clear throughout the Bible in the Old and New Testament. Psalm 82, verse 3, give justice to the weak and the fatherless. Maintain the right of the afflicted and the destitute. Isaiah 1:17, learn to do good, seek justice, correct oppression, bring justice to the fatherless, and plead the widow's cause. Micah chapter 6, verse 8, he has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God? Jesus rebuked the religious leaders of his day, but woe to you Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and every herb and neglect justice and the love of God, those you ought to have done without neglecting the others. And it gets right down to the fact that our mission as Christ followers is to preach the gospel first and foremost, but also embrace the cause of justice as Jesus does. We know in Revelation 19 with the return of Christ, one day there will be perfect justice carried out by a perfectly holy and just God. No longer will there be the Amadrezas and the Atmadamis oppressed by a corrupt and evil government. One day there will be perfect justice and retribution for the evil caused against them, for the millions of innocent Iranians that have been put to death because of an evil and corrupt government. One day there will be perfect justice carried out by a perfectly holy and just God. In the meantime, evil is pervasive throughout our world. Children are sold into sex slavery. The poor are beaten and forced to work without pay. Human trafficking or modern-day slavery continues in every country, city, and community. There are more than 35 million slaves in the world today, more than any time in history. The church must lead the way and pursue justice on behalf of the oppressed, the widow, the orphaned, the enslaved. So if we know the one who is completely just, should we not lead the charge against injustice? If we are fueled by the compassion of Christ, we can engage in these issues of injustice, protect the vulnerable, fight for those held in oppression, walk alongside the wounded, and point them to the one who heals, restores, and redeems. That is Jesus. Pursuing this justice starts and continues with a foundation of prayer, because we know it is his battle, not our own. It involves time and sacrifice. It means stepping out of your comfort zone and persevering with patience. It means walking in wisdom and not jumping in haphazardly or foolishly. We need to engage in fighting against this injustice. What's your step? What's your involvement? Prayer is the first step toward biblical justice. Join me in standing up, being a voice, and praying for Ahmadreza Jalali, for praying for Atna Dayami, that God would protect her as she speaks out now that she's released from prison, that God will use her in a mighty way to overthrow the injustices against women in Iran. This is a very bold, courageous woman. So you and I, if we want to get engaged in pursuing biblical justice in a country that is devoid of biblical justice, in a country that is ruled by Islamic law that perverts real justice, then we need to take the first step, and that is pray. Here's what you can do. Take my radio broadcast this morning. Put it on your Facebook page. There are stories on my Facebook timeline about Ahmadreza Jalali, about Atna Dayami. In fact, her story is in my book, Shout Freedom, The Desperate Cry of Iranians. You can purchase this through Amazon. Become familiar with the stories of my Iranian friends here in Iran that are held captive by this government. Learn to know them. They're on Facebook. And pray for them. Be their voice. This is not just my task. I have a passion for it, of course. But this is your task as a Christ follower. We've looked at what the scripture said this morning, and this is not an option for us. This is a command for us to be involved in being a voice for the oppressed. So I hope that I have in some way ignited that passion also in you. I want to take just a few minutes right now and take a break from all of the craziness and the evil in the world, and let's worship together. This is Hillsong, a beautiful song about praising the Trinity. This is called Praise the Father, Praise the Son.
There was mercy in your eyes to fulfill the Lord.
That is the powerful worship music of Hillsong. I was looking through my book that I wrote 2 years ago with my dear friend Manoush Bakhtiari, and called Shout Freedom, The Desperate Cry of Iranians. And as I opened up the pages, I came across a familiar story, one that you've probably heard of, but I feature her story at length in the book. It's the story of Sahar Khodayari. She was a young Iranian woman. All she wanted to do was go to a, they call it football, it's a soccer game. But of course, the soccer stadium is reserved for men only in Tehran. You cannot come and attend if you're a woman. The two sexes cannot sit together, cannot enjoy this sport together. It's been that way since the Iranian Revolution, the segregation of sexes. And she did what a lot of Iranian women did. This happened about 3 years ago. She dressed up like a man. And she was determined to go in and watch this. This was the passion of her life, just to go to a soccer game. Well, unfortunately, at the entrance, she was recognized and exposed as a woman dressing up as a man, and she was arrested. And she was going to be sentenced to 6 months, maybe 2 years, in prison for simply dressing up as a man in order to attend a soccer game in Iran. And Sahar thought about it, and she decided that living as a woman in Iran was hopeless, and she did what many Iranian women are doing, and that is committing suicide. She poured gasoline all over herself, all over her body, and struck a match and set herself on fire. Well, about 7 to 10 days later, she succumbed to her injuries in a hospital. But the soccer team that she wanted to watch, the Iranian soccer team, when they heard about her story, they did a special tribute and dedicated their soccer game to her. And all other soccer teams across the world, when they heard about her story, she's called Blue Girl. That's a nickname. They spoke out about this horrendous injustice that's going on. Well, the Iranian government, you know, of course, wanted to try to create this image. Well, you understand, we're going to change that rule a little bit. And so what they did, I think about a year later, was gave away free tickets to about 1,000 Iranian women to attend a soccer match. Well, they only did that to appease the pressure, the worldwide pressure on women. They have not changed the rule. It's still against the law if you're a woman in Iran to attend a soccer game, even though for one game they allow so many women in. And this, again, was to say to the world, we're not against freedom for women. Look at what we're doing. But it was nothing more than a ploy to appease international pressure, because the soccer league was going to do something about it. And they were going to start boycotting games in Iran. And, of course, that meant business and money. So they did what most corrupt governments do. They put on this big image-building display. I said all of that to say this to you this morning. We're talking about biblical injustice. We're talking about these cases in Iran of women and men that are tortured and persecuted. I want to get to you the passion. I can't do this normally. I'm praying that you will rise up and be a passionate voice for injustice everywhere, but in particular, the injustice against women in Iran. It continues day after day. The suicide rate in Iran is 70% among women. Once they come to the grips of understanding that this will never change in their thinking, they take their lives. God wants to change corrupt social structure in Iran, and God will do that. God will accomplish that as we speak out and pray, as we petition, as we fight for the rights of women in Iran. I'm still waiting for the liberal feminists to join me in this cause. I haven't heard a peep out of them. You know why? Because in reality, here in America, we have far more freedom and human rights than those in Iran. I'm not saying we don't have problems here, but we have far more freedom and human rights here in America compared to the women living in Iran. So this week, what I'm asking you to do is to set aside some time and pray for Ahmadreza Jalali. That's a mouthful. Ahmadreza Jalali. Pray for him that God will intervene and stop his execution. And pray for Atna Dami. She is a courageous voice. Pray for God's protection over her. Pray for her salvation. But pray for her. She's a strong voice for women in Iran. I want to thank you for joining me today on The Cross in the Desert. It has been a delight to be back, to be live in the studio. And I will see you soon again on the next episode of The Cross in the Desert. Have a fabulous, safe week.